there. Before you start listening, please make sure to subscribe to this podcast. This episode contains language and content of an explicit nature. Listener discretion is advised. Before a song is released, a record is produced, or a chorus is written, the musicians that write them think a lot. They live a lot, and they feel a lot. Before the chorus dives into the stories and experiences that shape these artists, and ultimately, the music we hear. I'm your host, Sophia Lopercaro, and this episode's guest is Another Sky.
I've actually changed how I feel about anger. As long as it's dealt with properly, it can be this incredible motor for change, I think. And if we suppress anger, we suppress something really important.
Hey there, welcome to this week's episode. It's me, your host, Sophia, as always. What has been going on in my life in music this week? I think the first place to start is to shout out my incredibly talented friend, Tyler Hammond. He is a brilliant jazz drummer here in the Los Angeles area. And once a week, he puts on a sort of improv or semi-improv jazz night at a hotel called Petit Hermitage, if I'm saying it with my Quebec French accent, if you will. But he puts it on in this really cool, like, small space in the up on the upper floor of the hotel. It looks like, I don't know, it looks like a speakeasy or like a cabinet of curiosities. Like, it's this very, like, luxuriously, like, upholstered walled room, and it's a fascinating little space to go and sit in and listen to some really great jazz music. My friend Jay Flatt, who is also an incredible saxophonist here in the city, was performing on this lineup, so it was wonderful to see both of them on the same lineup. And I got to bring some old friends along from back in my London days that happened to be in town, and that's always so lovely. It's like the best feeling in the world when you get friends together, or you take friends to an event that they haven't been to before and they have a really great time, especially if it's friends from out of town and they're in your city. You know, like, you want to show them a good time. You want them to enjoy themselves. And it's so, so fucking rewarding when you see them having the time of their lives. So that was my Sunday. Later in the week, I got to go and see James Vincent McMorrow play a special set on a rooftop in Hollywood, which was also amazing. I need to get back around to his music, and I'm really excited to do so. There was a song of his maybe about 10, 15 years ago called Glacier, and it had this, like, insanely cool build up in it up to the chorus, and I would always put it on when I was getting on an airplane and we were taking off. I have, like, certain songs that I would listen to during takeoff when I was flying, because I would for a long time get really bad flight anxiety, and if I could find these songs like Glacier by James Vincent McMorrow that had this dreamy quality and literally felt like flying, it ended up making it more of, like, a positive experience, and, like, I could just stare out the window as we, like, soared through the clouds and listen to this beautiful song instead of, like, borderline shitting myself because I was scared of turbulence, you know? It's nice how these things work, but James has, like, just the most gorgeous falsetto in his voice, like, this gorgeous, gorgeous colors to his voice, and I think it'll be well worth revisiting and really getting back into his music. So I'm glad that I got invited to that event and that I could kind of be reminded of what a great artist he is. Speaking of coming back around to great artists, I think now's a great time to talk about this week's guest, Another Sky. I counted and I realized that the first time that they came on this podcast was 72 episodes ago, which feels crazy. You know, like, I mean, I guess, like, now I'm doing episodes once a week. So getting those numbers up, you know, it's happening quicker and quicker. But still, like, I had them on, I think it was episode 7 for the first time, almost 4 years ago, or actually more than 4 years ago at this point, probably. And it feels crazy to think that that was the last time that I spoke to them about a record. It's crazy to think how much time has passed, how much has happened since then. Obviously, a pandemic happened somewhere in between all of this, and they're old friends of mine from London, but we hadn't got to catch up in a minute. So getting to talk to them and connect with them again at the point that they're at now and seeing everything that has transformed in their lives, all of the new, absolutely incredible music they're making, it was such a pleasure. You know, that first conversation was so special to me when we talked about their debut album, I Slept on the Floor, which is an incredible album if you haven't heard it before. It came out during the pandemic when nobody could tour, so I don't think as many people got to hear it as people should have. So go listen to I Slept on the Floor. But now seeing them come back 4 years later with a new record, Beach Day, seeing again how much they have transformed as people and as artists, and being able to hear it in the music is incredible. And I'm so proud of them. I love listening to this record. It still completely sounds like them, but because of the growth and the change that has happened, I can see here the changes in their sound. I can hear the changes in their lyrical themes. I can hear the ways that they're challenging themselves and moving in new directions. And it is awesome. As far as themes that we discuss on this record, there's a lot about learning to not necessarily see anger as a bad thing, especially for women. And also learning how to be gentler to yourself and speak to yourself with kinder words. And I think that those two things actually go hand in hand, even though it might sound like, you know, a gentle emotion like self-compassion and a more seemingly harsh emotion like anger would not lend themselves to each other, but they really do. I don't want to say more on that here because we're going to talk about it a little more at length in the episode, so you're going to have to stick around and listen. And with that in mind, I think I'm going to leave you to the episode. So this is my interview with Another Sky. Hi. Again, not Hello. as if we haven't been talking for the last like 10 minutes.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome. Why am I saying welcome?
Welcome
I don't know.
To your podcast.
Oh, wait, Katrina, is this your podcast now? Is that how this is going to go? Okay, great. You know, I'm trying to remember what the first episode y'all were on was. If it was like episode number, I want to say it was like 8, 9, or 10. And this is going to be episode 78.
Wow.
So there have been about 70 episodes in between.
Wow.
It feels like a different time.
I
can't even. I bet if I listened back, I'd be like, "Who? Sorry, who?"
Did you do it on your own?
Yeah. I think I just went. I don't know. I don't know what I said. But I think if I listened back now, I'd go, "Who is that? I don't know that person."
Same with me. I mean, I think that would be normal for any of us to listen to something from like 4 years ago and be like, "Who the fuck is that?" You know?
Yeah. I'm glad I wasn't involved. I wouldn't want to hear what I said 4 years ago.
Yeah,
what, do you know what I mean? I just don't even know where my head was at back then.
Yeah, it's true.
It's weird, isn't it?
I mean, look, like, we have to love our past selves, and I mean, they weren't exactly bad. Like, I look fondly on that time, minus my like mental health shit that was also going on at the time. But other, as far as the interview goes, and as far as like knowing you guys, I look back very fondly on that time. So
nice.
It was pre-COVID basically, which feels like a different, I don't know if that's the same for you, but it feels like a different world.
It does. I mean, everything, I mean, time itself would change everything, but the fact that we've had the pandemic, you know, that thing that we never talk about ever, right? Like, so not, no. Yeah, fuck it. I wish, I'm supposed to be good at words. This is my job. And even I am like struggling to talk about it. Cause yeah, it was, so much has changed. Like so much in our lives, in the world, in the music industry, in the way things have kind of moved around, gone up and down. I know that the pandemic was hard for you guys, especially because it landed right when your first record came out. And yeah, it's been, yeah, it's been.
Mm. It's been. Mm. It's giving.
It's giving back.
Hey, it's giving was not an expression we were using 4 years ago, so that's changed. But yeah, I think I cut off something you were going to say, Katrin.
No. I was going to talk, and then I was like, this is Sophia's podcast. Sophia asked the questions.
Yeah, you're supposed to talk too. Otherwise, I would just be talking in a vacuum.
In a closet. A very nice closet. I think you were in that closet when we did the first podcast. I remember it.
It was a different closet because I was still living in Texas back then.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
But I've always recorded in closets because the acoustics are good. It's an easy way to just get, like, pad out reverb and echo with soft stuff. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, but I guess getting into the record, because that's kind of why we're here. I mean, again, I said it before we started recording, but I mean, like, I've always been so, like, endlessly impressed by you guys as musicians, but getting to watch the growth that has happened over the last several years, and I know there's some songs that were written several years ago, some that are, you know, more recent, but just the way the projects come together as a whole, like, I hear so much growth. I hear the ways that you guys have challenged yourselves creatively. I've heard you guys, like, use, like for example, like, the hook on The Pain, like, on the chorus. I've never heard you guys do something like that, but it works so well, and it still fits, which is so cool.
Yeah, that was one of those songs that Katrin just randomly came out with and sent a little voice memo of it.
I was trying to be, like, Big Pig.
Yeah.
I was trying to write a sexy song, and then the first line that came out was, look at all the pretty people, I want to be them. I'm not. So it was still self-deprecating, but...
As soon as I heard that song, I got so excited, though, didn't I?
You did. Jack started free.
Yeah, just from Katrin's early demo. I just heard it, and it was like one of those songs when you listen to it, every line, every melody gets better and better and better as the whole song goes on. And I thought, we've got a good one here.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's still one of our faves. And it was just really fun to make. I think that's the main thing. We had fun. We didn't do that so much on the first album.
Yeah, I think that it's funny. There's elements of this record that feel more cynical than the first record, but by and large, it feels a lot more cathartic and a lot more self-compassionate.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think it is more self-compassionate. Mm-hmm. I think that started to happen towards the end of the record, which is something I've never actually had for myself. And I didn't know I didn't have it for myself. I didn't, you know, you grow up with these narratives and they're your life and you don't know. Yeah, I could talk a lot about that.
Yeah, well, we can and we probably will. And I think, I mean, I completely relate to it. Like, every time that I think that I've, like, kind of finally mastered my sense of self-compassion, I'm like, oh, here's this whole gap in my life of things that I have not learned how to be compassionate about. I think when early in your life, your brain gets wired in a way that you're not very self-compassionate, that it almost becomes, like, muscle memory, so that kind of lack of self-compassion can, like, worm its way into the most random places, and it's a lifelong thing to undo it.
Yeah, and it really is a lifelong thing, and that doesn't mean things can't change, but when your brain is wired a certain way, that is hard to change. That is really hard.
So fucking hard. But I think there's a line on the opening / title track Beach Day that I think speaks a little bit to that process, and also, at least for me as a listener, really set the tone of the way that, like, self-compassion was going to show up on this record. And that's the line that in the first chorus is, worked hard to kill the girl who couldn't keep the sun in her eyes, but later changes to work hard to love the girl who couldn't keep the sun in her eyes. And I think it's not only just the line itself, but it's the way that the line changes from the first to the second chorus that I feel like is so powerful in that kind of conversation of self-compassion.
I remember it originally was worked hard to kill twice. So I didn't even think that's just something that came out. That was how I was speaking to myself at the time. And I remember later on, I changed it to worked out in love. And I remember you said, don't go up on love. And I fought you on it. I fought Jack.
Yeah,
on
it was so weird. But it was only because I had demo-itis. I was so used to the original.
And I,
but I like the word love. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't
and
that.
And I said, it's amazing, no, it has to go up. Yeah. In the melody, it just has to, because it's like this change. It's like a change. Worked hard to love. And I didn't even clock that I'd written worked hard to kill. I didn't even clock that that was negative. A lot of the lyrics I didn't even clock were self-deprecating, and that was my world view. It's really interesting how that changed.
Yeah. And I think as we, like, again, it's one of the kind of complicated things about learning to love ourselves, is that part of the journey of learning to love yourself is not only loving yourself now, but loving who you were. And I think that that's a piece of that that we forget. And so at least when I read that, it kind of made me think of that process. Like, okay, right now I'm learning how to maybe love myself where I'm at and leave a past version of myself behind. But you have to still be able to love that past version of yourself. You know?
Yeah, you have to trust the journey of it. And just have compassion for the fact that you were young. You were younger. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. I keep hearing, like when I've talked to my therapist or talked to friends, like, the expression, I did the best I could with the information I had at the time.
I love that expression.
Yeah.
That's all anyone can do.
Yeah.
And it takes a long... When you're young... You're a bit arrogant and you're like, my view is the view. Why does no one else agree with me? And then as your information changes, you learn. And I do think in COVID, a lot of people had to reckon with that. There was a lot more time to kind of fight and think. And one of the big things for me was meeting people where they're at. And not expecting perfection, and just understanding that everyone's had their own narrative and their own life and their own lived experiences. And actually a lot of judgment and problems in the world come from a place of deep pain for a lot of people. It's actually coming from a deep place of pain. And that's something that I saw in myself in the record. And it was weird having that experience with our own record, with myself and with other people.
Yeah, I do find that's often what tends to happen. I think I remember saying this, I think, during our interview, and it's come up many times since. I think sometimes, like, our subconscious will kind of put things into the music that we're writing just because that's, you know, that's what we're thinking about. And also, like, what you said about meeting people where they're at, this is something I've realized for myself, but when you learn to meet other people where they're at, it makes it easier to meet yourself where you're at as well. Because I've realized, like, if I'm holding other people to an impossible standard, I'm probably holding myself to an even more impossible standard.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how those two can weirdly be tied together, you know?
100%. It's like, how you treat yourself is probably how you're going to treat other people.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really fascinating.
Yeah, it really, really is. And so it's strange how it becomes part of that process of learning to be kinder to yourself. But it's kind of cool at the same time, you know?
Yeah. It's been a real learning curve, this album. I think originally I felt quite justified in the anger. And I felt quite set on the anger. And it was only through making that music and writing the lyrics, and we were all in the same place. We were all sort of writing the anger. That's what was coming out. And I think there was just this halfway point where you turn and look at your lyrics and you go, no, there's something else here. There's something else going on here, and that's that's what happened. I think it was around I Never Had Control. That was like the breakthrough. Breakdown and breakthrough.
Absolutely. I feel like, you know, I almost put in my notes, like, whereas the pain, I think, is self-compassionate in a sort of, like, self-deprecating but sort of tongue-in-cheek way. It's like learning how to laugh at past mistakes. I Never Had Control is kind of like its much more gentle counterpart. It's kind of just giving yourself that hug. And like you said, being like, I didn't have control of things that have happened in my life. And I don't deserve to be angry at myself for them or mad at myself or carry shame, you know?
Yeah, I remember. So I think the reason the record didn't turn out to be full on kind of teenage anger, and I say teenage anger because a lot of it just feels very young and explosive. It was because I genuinely got myself into psychodynamic therapy. And that was just this transformative experience. And speaking about I Never Had Control, I remember when my therapist said, look, it's like you were in a car crash. It's like you were in a car crash. That you weren't in the driver's seat, you didn't have control, and you can't change that, you know? She was saying about self-compassion, you know, you think you were in the driver's seat, but you weren't. You were a passenger. And I love that metaphor. And I remember there were so many lyrics around that metaphor of a car crash, but they never really made it into the album. The songs we wrote with that never made it into the album, but I Never Had Control was part of that kind of car crash metaphor, but in a different, more beautiful way.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't need to be for the sentiment to still be there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm almost glad there weren't any songs about the car crashness of it.
The car crashness of it all. I'm going to use that.
New. It's giving.
There you go. Gen Z, listen up. We're setting the trends now. Us three specifically, the coolest people you have ever met are going to start deciding what lingo is cool. But yeah, on that note, where do I want to go as we leave the car crash-ness thing? My God. Well, actually, I think I do want to talk about anger because I'm actually really happy that there's a lot of anger on this record. And again, that may be coming from a very personal place, but, you know, I think that this is something that is very particular for women, for people that were assigned female at birth, but also people that are people pleasers or anyone that's kind of in a realm, like, in a space where they're usually the one having to, like, absorb other people's emotions. Which more often than not is women, but not all the time. But we are often, I think, socialized to suppress anger. Because we're told we're crazy when we're angry. Like, we get, like, the crazy ex-girlfriend trope, for example, in, like, dating or, like, or hysteria or all this stuff. Mm. And so whenever I've seen a record where someone, like a woman is reclaiming anger, I find it really healing and really powerful. So I love that there is a lot of anger on this record.
Oh, that makes me happy. I wanted that. I wanted to be unashamed in expressing that anger because you can't. Just because you're a woman, you can't pretend. You just have to get it out. It's got to go somewhere, or it eats you from the inside out. So yeah, I'm glad you found it healing.
Yeah, there's something I think you had said. I don't know where the interview was from, but it's something that you said about the song "Burn the Way," which was, as much as anger is a difficult, complicated emotion, it's sometimes the first step towards survival. And I loved that because I think it's so true.
It gets you out of things, I think.
Yeah.
It really gets you out. And that's what I didn't understand about anger before. As a people pleaser, I I did not understand the power of anger. And it was actually, Burn the Way was Jack's demo. And I think a lot of your, a lot of your passion and anger has actually been quite inspiring for me. So for context, for anyone That's listening to this podcast, me and Jack have been in this band 10 years. We're like family. It's like this little, not a fucked up family. just like.
They're not Fleetwood Mac.
No, thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God.
But it's a little, yeah, we've been through so much, and something I've, and from that Burn the Way demo, Jack wrote it from the point of view of you. Yeah. And I was originally going to take Jack's lyrics, but I realised I couldn't rework Jack's narrative, but I could be inspired by Jack's passion on Burn the Way. And just this anger's, it's like a motor. I've actually changed how I feel about anger. As long as it's dealt with properly, it can be this incredible motor for change, I think. And if we suppress anger, we suppress something really important.
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah. Anger is a fuel sometimes. Like, as long as you don't let it turn into like a wildfire and like burn everything to the ground, it can help you realize like, I need to get out of a situation, or I need to set a boundary, or whatever. And also, like, you're allowed to be angry when someone does something fucked up, whether that be something like with Burn the Way and like the way that, you know, there's people who deny climate change, or someone more actively in your life who's directly hurt you, you're allowed to be angry at them.
Yeah, for sure. And talking about forest fires, what I find really interesting about wildfires, we have a friend, Hannah Stretton, who wrote an album out in the Australian outback with a wildfire happening like all around her. I didn't know that originally, before global warming, wildfires are actually quite regenerative. They're actually quite important. It was your Australian family, Jack, who said this.
Yeah.
They're important for regrowth, to burn it all. And that was kind of Burn the Way. That was the inspiration behind Burn the Way. Like, let's burn whatever this was down so that something else can be rebuilt. And there's a cathartic process to that anger. It's so important, especially for women, because we are trained to provide emotional labor. Like, we do the emotional labor, and when it's met with a brick wall, like with narcissism, you keep bashing against that brick wall. But what anger does is allow you to see yourself, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to see yourself, and I don't know why. Yeah, it's an interesting one for sure.
It is, but I'm glad when we can start to switch on to the importance of it, because it is really, like you said, it's much like a wildfire that doesn't get out of hand. I'll modify the metaphor, if you will, to that, you know. Like, a regenerative wildfire rather than, like, the, you know, someone's gender reveal party went horribly wrong wildfire, you know? In that, you know, like, in that regard, it is regenerative. It helps us to release things and to move on and to choose better for ourselves. And that is necessary. Otherwise, like you said, I think there's somewhere else where you said like anger can calcify into bitterness, and it just stays stuck in our system, and it's awful, you know. And we don't deserve that. So
no,
anger is good.
Anger is good.
Be angry, everyone. Be really fucking angry. Speaking of Burn the Way, I noticed there's a line in Burn the Way that is sort of shared, or at least like semi-repeated, in Psychopath. In Burn the Way, it's "you split the atom and I'm not grateful," And then in Psychopath, it's you can't split the atom. And I was wondering if that's on purpose, that they're, it's in there, one, like they're both in there, and two, that they're next to each other on the record.
It was for sure on purpose. It was like an answer song. Mm. You can't split the atom. Yeah, it's like, I remember you split the atom and I'm not grateful. It's deliberately ambiguous. I think even to me, it was deliberately ambiguous. And it just kind of meant two things. One was the idea of a man. Like, we have this idea that within the patriarchy, we have this ideal of man splitting the atom, just really being God. In Psychopath, that lyric, the lyric, you can't split the atom, was me speaking to someone very personally, trying to say, you think you are this ideal of a man, really you're an individual, and you're not better than me because one guy or a group of people, I don't know who split the atom, but one guy split the atom. That wasn't you. Like, this isn't what you think this is. You're not in control here. It's not fair. And yeah, that was just a really bitter... Psychopath is very bitter.
I mean, it's called Psychopath. Like, you're not starting from a place of warmth, you know? Like,
but it was really cathartic. That was a really cathartic song. That was like,
yeah,
that was the last one we prepared for the album, wasn't it?
Yeah,
we went, this album needs something, and we realized we hadn't explored the full breadth of anger. And I lyrically, I thought, what if I just went there? What if I just did it? And it was funny. I was laughing. I was laughing, imagining this person hearing it.
We thought we were already brave by going to like Burn the Way level anger. And then, yeah, we had like 2 weeks after we finished the album, me and Katrine just like met up and we were like, are you feeling what I'm feeling? We both knew that we needed to take it, like Katrine just said, to the absolute limit of what we can do. And yeah, I had the riff kicking around already. The really aggressive, like, I don't know what it is, metal riff, I guess.
And almost, like, yeah.
Yeah, it basically is. If you played it with a different sound, it would be a metal riff.
Oh, totally.
And yeah, so we just went for it. And then we were like, okay, now we're being brave. And it freaked everyone out, didn't it?
It did.
Like, it freaked all of us out. We were like, can we really put this song out? Is it going to work? We were like, why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Literally. I think that I've started writing some like angry shit. I have something floating around in my back pocket that I plan to do something with at some point. And even I was like, I'm letting myself be angrier than I normally am. And it's terrifying, but I think as long as like whoever it's written about, you're not like putting their like name, address, and social security number out in the public sphere, you totally can write a fucking angry song. Like, you're
for
allowed.
Sure.
You know?
I think songwriting, the point is to be truthful, and all my favorite songwriters go there. Whether that makes them a moral person or not, I don't know, but the point of songwriting is to tell the truth and be brave enough to tell those secrets that people can then see themselves in. I don't know, I think that's the point of songwriting. I think...
I agree.
You have to say it, because it's almost your only place to speak. You can't say it to the person.
Yeah.
Or maybe you can, but...
Well, something good has to come out of it as well, I think. You know, like, out of a shit thing, you hope something good comes out of it. So for us, if it's a song, then that's like, great.
Yeah.
And fuck that person.
Exactly. Exactly. Literally.
It's like a nice, it's a nice little thing that you get from the pain that you went through, you know?
And I think it's
And that's good.
Yeah, and I think in its own small way, like, you know, sometimes it can be scary and it can feel like, oh, am I doing the right thing by, like, putting this out publicly? But it's like, even if it's not, like, getting to directly, publicly confront someone, it's allowing yourself to not be silenced, maybe just in a way that, you know, works better for whatever your situation is. But also, like, again, I think it comes back to that feeling of being allowed to be justified in your anger. You're allowed to speak on it as well. And like I said, as long as you're not, like, sharing someone's name, I think that for our own selves, we're allowed to do it. And also, like, other people who have felt that rage in some part of their life will feel very validated in that song and feel like they have permission to process it because you did it. And that's awesome.
I love that, giving someone permission to process something. I think that's really important in songwriting as well.
Yeah, massively. So again, I'm happy that Psychopath is on the record. And speaking of one more angry song, and I want to talk about it because it deals with another specific type of anger that I really love, and that's a feeling. And that's because this idea of if you're not productive in a certain way, there is something wrong with you. And for me, as a neurodivergent person, so like someone with like raging obsessive compulsive disorder, like I know that I felt like there's something wrong with me when I'm not productive the way that other people are. And so being able to tell someone who's making you feel that way to go fuck themselves is just... it's delicious.
We took some moves on this album for sure.
Yeah, oh my god,
it was just so fun. Honestly, underlining all of this, like we actually just had a great time.
Yeah,
fucking with all these subjects, like
yeah,
didn't we? Do you remember it all? It was just fun. Like I can't describe it. Like you said, it's cathartic because you just let those extreme, like you know, when we obviously support Katrin's lyrics and what she wants to say, so. When she says something, we're saying it too. So we're back, we're with her. So we were all getting it out of our system as you pushed the boat out, we met you. It was just like a little, so for all of us, it was sick.
Y'all
and
were
just
the,
really fun.
You were like the Norwegian arrows, like on fire, like kind of
totally,
shooting.
Totally, so... yeah, like a fucking massive, yeah, like 200 meter wide arrow flaming beast behind
yeah.
Katrin. Who's at the front with a sword, like, come on!
Freedom!
We should make that in AI.
Yeah, that's AI generate that shit.
Oh my god, please.
But it was, yeah, a feeling you carry on with the lyrics.
Yeah.
But
you can,
it was fun.
You the can funny have... thing is, with a feeling, it's funny, that's my least favourite one. But I think just because I was in such a bit of... That was when the anger was nearly calcifying into bitterness. But I think halfway through the song, I bring it back a little bit. Like, all you have to do... I can't even remember my own lyrics now. All you have to do is breathe something.
Oh, the break in the bridge, yeah.
Yeah. It's a victory just to breathe and know the truth. Being alive is all you have to do.
Exactly.
I love that bit.
I'm kind of glad that we're talking about this song then, kind of towards like the end of what I want to talk about on this interview, because I think I wanted to talk about the place where anger and self-compassion intersect, and I think that that is a really perfect place to do that, because, you know, when someone else makes you feel shitty about the way that you work or the way that you are or whatever, you know, you internalize that shame. And you feel like you're not enough. And that's part of not being self-compassionate. So when you say just breathing and being alive is enough, I feel like, again, that to me feels like a place where those two concepts meet.
Yeah, definitely. I love that bit of the song where it almost ties in with I never had control. You know, just acceptance. It's just accepting, okay, this person, it has these expectations of me. In the case of a feeling, it was a Universal Credit work coach, which is really hilarious. But also if you dig into any of your lyrics, you can see a pattern and, oh, maybe it's about this as well. Maybe it's about this as well.
What I'll say quick, just to cut in, is that it was one of the first ones we did where you started exploring saying how you really felt about people in songs. So maybe you're not happy with it as much because you've got more articulate now. about those things, but yeah, do you know what I mean?
It was very.
It's quite raw though for people. Like, I really like that song because, like Sophia said, it in that bridge and everything, you do get both sides in one song, which is the only song on the album that has like two feelings because of that.
Yeah,
but I get for you how that's not pure enough necessarily. It's like through that song,
I think
you can pull it out.
I sound a little bit like meh.
Yeah, it was quick. We did it quick though, didn't we? You didn't get time to think about it.
Just the beginning. The beginning's just a bit, I don't like the way she talks to me. And it's like, that's cool, but...
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I think it's fun though. It's a good vibe.
It was fun. But it came out, I was like...
It was quick.
No, but... we need it. We don't always have to be like, platforming the biggest versions of anger, like those, like I think also, like, you have to learn how to be okay with those smaller frustrations to also sit with the bigger ones. So, and it's still cathartic as fuck. Like I said, like, for me, listening to that song, and I don't know, especially because, like, yeah, anger is not something that we allow women to experience. Pettiness is not something that we allow ourselves to experience. And again, yes, being, like, overly petty is not a good thing. But, like, there's times where it's justified to be petty. And I'm like, yeah, like, let yourself have it. I don't know. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also funny. It was supposed to be funny. But I know that the head of our... record label came round to listen to the album, loved it, and then at the end turned round and looked at me and said, "Are you okay?"
That is literally the first thing he said, didn't he?
And no, the answer was no. No.
Thing is, none of us thought about that the whole time. No. I remember when he asked you that, I was really shocked. I was like, "What?"
But
what
then
does
I
mean?
Looked at the, but yeah, I had the same. I looked reflect. At the lyrics and I thought, "Oh."
Yeah, we hadn't done that yet, had we? We hadn't reflected on, like, actually what had happened.
And then, when I showed it to some kids I teach, they all said, like, "I'm really worried about you. Death of the author. And what's some other... I never had control. Are you okay?" And, you know, that's kind of what I like about our band, though, that we will just go the places that it's scary to go. We'll always go there. We're literally in the crypt of a church. It's scary.
Yeah. I was going to mention the crypt part in the context of this conversation. But again, it doesn't feel like you're keeping yourselves trapped in these places. It feels more like you're going there to process them. And I have more than enough time for records that do that. I think that they do a lot more to help people heal than they do to keep people stuck. So funnily enough, like, when I heard this record, I didn't hear less like, "Oh my God, I'm worried about them." I hear them growing. I hear them releasing. I hear them processing. And this is coming from me, someone that, even though we haven't seen each other in a while, I do know you to some degree. And, you know, without, like, going into, you know, stuff outside of the record, because this is an interview, but, you know, like, I didn't read it as, "Oh my God, I'm scared. Like, are they good?" It was, no, I feel like there's an acceptance and a release here.
And, oh, I was about to ask a question, but I just want to know your take on the record.
Yeah.
I'm just so interested.
I mean, again, for me, it comes back to that idea of acceptance and release, like being able to be like, and again, maybe I'm projecting because there's a lot of my own journey in the last few years that I can run parallels through, you know, in terms of my own journeys with self-love and anger. And the two have been very intertwined for me, because when I don't choose to be angry at someone for the way that they've behaved towards me, I usually turn it inward. I'm like, well, why didn't anything from why, you know, what did I do wrong to make this person behave this way? Or why didn't I catch this before it happened? And so for me, learning how to love myself, love the way that I am, not carry shame around it, and learning how to externalize, like, anger instead of always internalize it, the two have really gone hand in hand. So, I think because I've lived through that type of experience and those two experiences so closely in tandem, that's what I saw in the record. And it might be projection, it might not be. I'm guessing based on our conversation that a lot of it does, like, is where y'all were coming from. But yeah, it to me, I see it as not being afraid anymore to be kind to yourself and also call other people out on bad behavior.
For sure. And you said something really interesting about catching it. And I think in the context of women and anger, we're literally taught never to catch it. We're just taught to just take it.
Yeah.
And that's what I hope this record can at least partially convey, that how I never had control. Like, how could you have caught it with the information you had at the time? Like, how can we can only exist in this world. We can't. So much I want to say around that. Like, how can you catch things? It's living, and mistakes are living, and there is only forward. And that anger, like, why didn't I stick up for myself? Why didn't I see it? Why didn't I know? Why did I allow this to happen to me?
Yeah.
And it can become really all-encompassing, and that's certainly a place I've been in for the past 4 years. Like, why did I let it all happen? Why did I? And there comes a point where you just have to, self-compassion. You have to allow yourself. And you can also, I think it's really interesting that you can also like that about yourself, that you are compassionate, because as much as it's people-pleasing behavior, I saw this video, I've seen it before, but I saw it again last night, and it was Sally Rooney saying, I don't believe in this individual self-love stuff. Like, we all live in the world together. That's basically what she was saying, paraphrasing there. But it made me think again, you know, actually something that the world doesn't value, or the world calls people-pleasing, which it is to some extent, is an incredible power, actually, that isn't, you know, you see a narcissist, you see a walking wound, of course you want to help. You're a compassionate, good person. And it's really, and there can be that anger of, why didn't I catch that? Why didn't I let that happen? But there can also be that self-love of, because I wanted to see the good. I wanted to see it get better. I didn't want to believe it was what it was.
Beach Day is available now wherever you normally get your music. This podcast is hosted, edited, and produced by myself, Sophia Lopercaro, and the artwork is by Meg Wilford.